Broadcasting on the Drug Truth Network, this is Cultural Baggage.
It's not only inhumane, it is really fundamentally un-American. Go
war!
Go war!
My name is Dean Becker. I don't condone or encourage the use of any drugs, legal or illegal. I report the unvarnished truth about the pharmaceutical, banking, prison, and judicial nightmare that feeds on eternal drug war.
Thank you for joining us on this edition of Cultural Baggage. If you've heard my reports over the last week, you have heard that my mother passed on a week ago yesterday. And there's been some discussion, some reports issued out of Israel indicating that perhaps marijuana administered to a stroke patient immediately after their stroke happens helps to prevent brain swelling by as much as 50%. And I'm proud that today we will have as our guest the director of biology at the University of Colorado, Mr. Robert Melamed, and we'll have him online here in just a second. Let's see if we can reach him now. Dr. Melamed.
Hi there, I'm here.
Yes, sir. Welcome to Cultural Baggage. How are you, sir?
I'm fine. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yes, sir. We had a bit of a discussion earlier this week, and there are many ways that the cannabinoids help the human system. Let's begin talking about that study out of Israel about how it might help people having suffered a stroke.
Well, certainly. In order to really get into that at all, it's, I think, important to have a little bit of a background on the immune system.
Very good, sir.
Very much involved.
That's why you're here, sir. Please explain what you want.
Well, in general, our immune system is designed to protect us. And it protects us from bacteria and viruses, and it protects us from, you know, tumor cells, etc. On the other hand, in the manner in which it does some of its protection, it also harms us. So in general, there are two arms to the immune system. One is typically viewed as pro-inflammatory, and the other turns that down. It's like a thermostat. You know, you have a particular setting, and it goes up and down from there. Well, it turns out that when you have a head injury or if you have a stroke, your immune system goes and responds because there's trouble in that area. And part of the way that it first responds is always with that inflammatory response, because that's how we basically sanitize an area. Say we have a cut and you have bugs that are getting in there, right? Well, the first thing your immune system does is it gets there and it sanitizes the area with things that are akin to bleach and things that are akin to radiation. So that's how it winds up killing organisms. But the problem is that when you have head injury or stroke, that same immune response creates inflammation in your brain, and your brain is not very tolerant to inflammation. So what happens is it winds up sending cells down a death road, basically, where their response to that inflammation sets off a whole series of events that ultimately winds up in those cells dying. Well, it turns out that the balancing act between the pro- and anti-inflammatory arm of our immune systems, the way our bodies regulate that is by making marijuana-like compounds known as endocannabinoids. Endo from within, cannabinoids, marijuana-like. So if we have head injury or stroke or inflammation in general in our brain, our body tries to turn that down by making endocannabinoids. And it's as a result of marijuana and synthetic marijuana-like compounds like the ones developed in Israel at Hebrew University, all those compounds do is mimic the way our body works. So, yeah, they have profound anti-inflammatory properties that can be of huge benefit in the brain in terms of reducing the secondary cell death that occurs as a result not of the primary damage, but as a result of the subsequent inflammatory process that's mediated by our immune system.
Well, very good, sir. And these studies that were conducted in Israel, have you had a chance to look at them? They are standard studies. Tell us about those results, if you will.
Well, again, the results, what they did was they showed that they were using a synthetic. Because let's back up a second here. For a drug company to make money on a product that they produce, they've got to typically have some kind of patent on it or something else that'll keep out competitors. All right. Now, the problem with marijuana is that you can't patent the plant. You might be able to patent a particular strain, like one, for example, that has no THC and could be grown for hemp, but you can't patent marijuana plants as a general entity. So a drug company has to spend literally hundreds of millions of dollars in bringing any drug to the market. So they typically do that when they own a patent on something that looks promising. And since in this case they can't have a patent on it, that's why marijuana has lingered in the pharmaceutical industry, even though it's been recognized now by researchers around the world as literally regulating all aspects of our lives in terms of our body functions. So what the drug companies have done, as a result really of researchers having done it, and then the drug companies buy the patents on it, researchers have discovered a variety of synthetic cannabinoids that mimic THC, as well as essentially therefore mimicking the compounds that our body produces, the endocannabinoids. So there's a variety of different classes of compounds that serve as these mimics and that are patented. So now the drug company can develop something and they can own what they develop and essentially produce a pharmaceutical product. So some of the drugs that have been developed at the Hebrew University are either cannabinoid agonists, which means they stimulate the cannabinoid system, or cannabinoid antagonists, which mean they inhibit it. Because with any illness and with any medicine, there are times where you might want to turn on a particular pathway, and there's other times that you might want to turn off a pathway. Now, it so happens that because of the central role that these endocannabinoids play in everyone's health, they have a huge, huge potential for benefiting people. On the other hand, because there might be some people who are producing too much already in particular tissues, that maybe you might want to turn it down. And I can give you some examples of that. It turns out that everybody in the country, so we're talking about George Bush and Ashcroft, as well as everyone who is listening to this show, we all, whenever we get hungry in response to making marijuana-like compounds. And they stimulate our brain and give us the munchies, just the way marijuana does. Again, marijuana is just mimicking the way our body works. So there are so many circumstances where we might want to upregulate it, but there are also ones where we might want to downregulate. For example, people who are overweight. It's now been shown that certain people have a genetic situation that essentially prevents them from breaking down their endocannabinoids in their brain, which makes them have more. So these people are a little bit more stoned, essentially. But what's the consequence? Munchies. And these people are often overweight.
Well, sir, you talk about the human body responding to various situations with the release of these endocannabinoids, you said?
Yep.
It's been shown that these endocannabinoids affect various systems, various organs of the body. I've heard it said that it can be used to help prevent prostate cancer and even breast cancer, and I'm sure there are other means where it could be of help.
Well, the fact is, and this is absolutely true, backed up by peer-reviewed journals, every single system in our body, and by a system I mean our immune system, nervous system, digestive system, respiratory system, cardiovascular system, endocrine system, excretory system, you name it, right? Any organized system in our body is homeostatically regulated by cannabinoids. Again, the idea of a thermostat. So it turns out that it's not a 50-50 deal, you know, where some people might have more and other people might have less. And that, in general, you know, it's 50-50. Maybe it'll help half and hurt half. It's really not that much of a symmetrical balance, because every one of us, we're all suffering from a terminal disease, and it's called aging. The best science today suggests that free radicals, these are special reactive chemicals that occur as a result of us basically burning the few food that we eat. It's an inescapable thing. We make these free radicals, and when they're made in excess or even just at low levels but accumulating over time, they are believed to be what's involved in aging and age-related diseases, things like Alzheimer's disease, cardiovascular disease, autoimmune disorders like arthritis and multiple sclerosis and diabetes. So we have an asymmetry, really, in that many of us, and I would actually say most of us, could probably benefit from some cannabis consumption, because what cannabis does, what cannabinoids do to be more specific, is that they basically inhibit this free radical production and the consequences of it. So it actually acts as an anti-aging drug.
If I may ask, the properties of cannabis, it contains THC and the cannabinoids. Is that correct, sir?
Well, let me back up. The plant, we would call an exocannabinoid, from without of the body. And THC is one of about 60-something cannabinoids that are made by the plant. And by cannabinoids, really, the very specific examples are the ones that actually bind to what's known as the THC receptors. That's how THC works in the brain. It binds to receptors, and receptors change biochemistry in the cell, and that's how it does all of the different things that it does in the body when you consume cannabis, again, which are the same things that your body is doing by the cannabinoids that it makes. So let me follow up with what you were asking there. Many different uses?
Yes, sir. Where have you found applications where it can be of benefit?
I'll give you examples for myself. I happen to be fortunate enough to live in Colorado, which is a state that has legitimized the medical use of marijuana, as long as you have a doctor's prescription. And I happen to have, based on my genetics, based on my family history, I have a section of DNA that's called HLA-B27. And what happens as a result of my version of that gene is that I'm predisposed to things like autoimmune diseases like arthritis, and in particular arthritis of the spine called ankylosing spondylitis. Well, I'm 57 years old now, and I have had back trouble for many, many years. And basically, when you look at MRIs of me now, there are many places where I no longer have discs. They've just flattened out. And in fact, I'm now 2 inches shorter than I was many years ago. Well, it turns out that that's a result of an inflammatory kind of a destructive process. Again, the idea of the thermostat, right? We're balancing out synthesis and creating newness in our body with basically degradation and the loss of our integrity. And that's what the aging process is, as opposed to youth, where you see everything is growing and expanding. So what we want to do is modulate that kind of decay. And in my particular case, what the cannabinoids do, again, via their modulation of the immune system, is they prevent the degradation, or they reduce. They don't prevent it, obviously, otherwise I wouldn't have this problem.
Right.
But they reduce the severity. When my neurologist looked at my x-ray, he says, "Boy, a surgeon wouldn't know where to begin with you." And I explained to him that, you know, for the most part, I don't have a problem because I consume cannabis, I exercise, I stretch, I, you know, sleep appropriately, I do the right things to try and take care of myself. But that doesn't mean that I don't need the cannabis. It's what allows me to do the things that I do. It's what keeps me healthier than I might otherwise be. Again, for example, using myself as an example, I had knee surgery in 1989, and the orthopedic surgeon said, "Bob, you shouldn't run. You don't have cartilage in your knees." Well, I run a few times a week, and I've run ever since 1989, but I consume a small amount of cannabis before I run to turn down that inflammatory response and to prevent further degradation. And for the most part, again, I don't have problems with my knees. And again, it doesn't even stop there for me, in that when I first moved to Colorado, I developed GERD, gastrointestinal reflux disease. And I went to a gastroenterologist, and they, you know, stuck the scope down on my stomach, and they confirmed, yes, you have GERD. Well, if you read the latest science, and I should make a little addition there. When I first moved here, I decided I would stop smoking for a while. So I was an illegal consumer before I was a legal consumer. In fact, I've consumed cannabis since I was 16 years old when I first entered college. And I've been smoking now for 41 years.
Dr. Melamed, I wanted to just point out that shows, again, the fallacy of this drug war demonism. that, again, you were able to complete colleges, earn grades, and to rise to the level of director of the biology department?
You know, the only people who believe that fallacy are the people who say it, for the most part, and the people who are on the wrong side of this drug war issue. If you look in our medical schools, if you look in our colleges, if you look in our law schools, there's a good 30% of the students that are consuming and have been consuming cannabis. And some of them are famous scientists today, Nobel Prize winners included. So, you know, the old story that we were all told is that marijuana destroys your brain. Well, what I've already told you with respect to head injury or stroke, marijuana protects your brain. And there's a ton of science out there now that shows that. You know, and it shows, for example, one of the things that, you know, I was always told was that brain cells can't regenerate. Well, it turns out that they can regenerate. And interestingly, that regenerative process is in part controlled by cannabinoids. So that if you eliminate those cannabinoids, which you can do by making a special strain of mouse called a knockout mouse, where you eliminate, for example, the cannabinoid receptor, so they have no receptor. So they can't be stimulated by THC or endocannabinoids, etc. Well, those mice have a whole variety of characteristics associated with them when they have lost the ability to use the marijuana that they make. And among that is that they're very fearful of any kind of change, because among the things that cannabinoids regulate are our open-mindedness and our ability to learn new things.
Well, Dr. Melamed, I think what I wanted to do most today was to point out the fact that it is the policy of the U.S. government to prevent research that could validate and thence make possible the use of these cannabis medicines for people who have these various maladies. Because it was my mother this time, next time it could be the listener or their mother, or someone that they love. And that, why, I know you don't know the answer, but I wonder why the U.S. government is so afraid of this plant and what it might
do. I will give you an answer. I think I know the answer.
Very good.
And it's a radical, shocking answer.
Well, but please, sir, go ahead.
Well, so we all are carrying around and living with this endocannabinoid system that's regulating all aspects of our body. Now, if you look at anything in any body, in any living system, what you're going to find is an average amount in the population, and some people are going to have more, and some people are going to have less. It's just inevitable because, you know, our genes, even though we have the same genes in general, we have different flavors of those genes, and that can turn things on or turn things off differently. So it's an unavoidable conclusion that some people in this country and in any country, and including animals who are not humans, some will have more cannabinoid activity, they'll be better endowed with it, and other people will be deficient in it, and we'll have a particular average. So if we look at some of the things that have now been shown in animal studies with respect to the effects of endo or exocannabinoids, as I just mentioned, they control open-mindedness and the ability to learn new things, and the ability to be optimistic, and the ability to look into the future and kind of embrace the unknown. So what we have in our country today, and what we have in all of us, because everything in life is a balance of opposing forces. It's this thermostat idea again, right? And sometimes you swing one way, and sometimes you swing the other way. But the bottom line is, there are going to be people who are not able to learn. When you tell them and you show them this science, why marijuana is good, why it can be tremendously helpful to relieve suffering for countless people, they cannot relearn that because they will taught otherwise, and the way their brain works, they are not capable of relearning things.
Dr. Melamed, we only have about a minute left. I was wondering if you had some closing thoughts, some websites you might want to send folks to.
Well, I think we're dealing with a genetic battle here, where people who are less well endowed with the cannabinoid system are the people who go and become politically powerful, because they're looking backwards in general, and more people will agree with each other when they look backwards as opposed to when they look into the unknown. So I think our government naturally selects for people who are deficient in cannabinoids, and what we're looking at here is a war between the people who want to move forward and the people who want to move backwards.
Very, very well put, my friend. I thank you for joining us on this edition of Cultural Baggage. We've been talking with Dr. Robert Melamed, the Director of Biology at the University of Colorado.
My pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
It's time to play Name That Drug by its side effects. Dizziness, nausea, and fatigue, whose effects diminish over time of use, decreased sleep disturbance, obfuscation of pain, increased mobility, decreased spasticity, and enhanced lifestyle for sufferers of multiple sclerosis. Time's up. The answer, Sativex, the full cannabis plant extract that will soon be on Canadian druggist shelves, and of which the Marijuana Policy Project's Bruce Merkin said,
Sativex is truly liquid marijuana. Sativex is to marijuana as a cup of coffee is to coffee beans.
Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org.
I'm Richard Cowan. I do MarijuanaNews.com and the Marijuana News World Report on PopTV.net.
The Dutch are set to break new ground with marijuana legalization. Tell us what's going on over there.
Well, the Dutch system is now actually about 30 years old. They have tolerated the sale of small amounts of cannabis in the coffee shops, not just in Amsterdam, as a lot of people think, but all over the Netherlands. There are virtually all of the cities of any size in the Netherlands have one or more coffee shops. And it has been a very successful policy for them because they have separated hard drugs from cannabis so that they have a much lower rate of hard drug use by young people than the United States or Canada or Britain. The Dutch have been very pleased with this policy, but it leaves the supply side, so that's called the back door, illegal. That is, it's illegal to cultivate cannabis to supply the coffee shops. So, our mayors of 20 of the 30 largest cities in the Netherlands have urged the government, actually more than once, to do something to at least semi-legalize the supply side the way they have semi-legalized the sale side.
This just in from the Los Angeles Times. Medical marijuana advocates sued the city of Fresno on Monday, hoping to overturn what they called unreasonable restrictions on medical marijuana dispensaries. Americans for Safe Access, an Oakland-based nonprofit group, and William McPike, an attorney, caregiver, and qualified medical marijuana patient, filed the complaint in Superior Court in Fresno. They contend that what they refer to as a ban unlawfully deprives qualified medical marijuana patients the medicine allowed them under California state law. Many cities have instituted moratoriums on such clubs. Three others have banned them. Under a Fresno ordinance approved October 26, 2004, a dispensary cannot distribute pot to more than two people. Attorney Joe Elford said, limiting membership in collectives or cooperatives to no more than two people does not allow collectives and cooperatives to function. 32 cities throughout the state have enacted moratoriums to halt dispensing while they develop policies to regulate pot clubs. Medical marijuana advocates hope to overturn Fresno's ordinance and encourage other California cities and counties to adopt sensible policies and regulations around dispensing medical marijuana, says Chris Herms. This is Steve Nolan for the Drug Truth Network.
You may have heard people question what impact the approval of the cannabis medication Sativex will have on the medical marijuana movement. Some, such as drug policy commentator Mark Kleiman, have even asserted that support for Sativex is inconsistent with support for making crude bulk cannabis available as well. Not true. Not only is this consistent, it's the only rational position. Sativex will be available eventually here in the U.S. as it is now in Canada. And when it is, it will probably be too expensive for at least some of us. The option of growing one's own cannabis, which could then be reduced to a tincture, is not only a viable option, for some, it's the only option. It is also nonsense to assert, as Kleiman does, that advocates don't want research. I can only speak for myself and the people with whom I've worked, but I've been in drug policy for the last 20 years, so I think I know of what I speak. We've been pushing hard for serious research for years. We believe the evidence is already strong enough for cannabis to be used, yes, but we need basic unbiased research to find out what are the real physical and psychological effects of cannabis. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh, editor of DrugWarFacts.org.
Like Paul Revere, former police officer Howard Wooldridge is riding his horse Misty back across America, proclaiming that we must legalize all drugs. Let's ask him why.
Well, Dean, it's been picking up well here in the last couple of weeks since we left Phoenix. I've been on a number of radio programs. A number of local papers have interviewed me, and we've been getting the message out about the failure of the war on drugs, and I feel real good about it.
Now, that shirt you wear, cops say legalized drugs. Ask me why. You still getting those questions?
Absolutely. In fact, I've had a whole bunch of police, both retired and not, asking me about it. I had a chief, a former New Mexico police officer and former sheriff, who we got into a big heated discussion. In the first 5 minutes, he said basically we need to kill everybody who uses illegal drugs. And 5 minutes later, I had him agreeing that in the privacy of your own home, as an adult, it shouldn't be the government's business. I got him real close to saying the L word.
Well, it's amazing what a little truth will do, isn't it?
Yeah, Dean, it really is. I mean, 5 minutes, 10 minutes into a discussion, whether with a person or with a Rotary or Kiwanis, it is simply amazing how many people are ready to hear a message besides build more prisons. And it really encourages me that the message I'm spreading across America, as Misty and I do the Paul Revere thing, is really paying off. It's really worth doing, and we're inspired to go on to the next city. Well, this is Howard Wooldridge from LEAP and Misty from north of Socorro, New Mexico, signing off.
All right. I want to thank Howard Wooldridge for that. He's doing a brave adventure, about a 4,000-mile horse ride across America to point out the fact that cops say legalized drugs. And he's wanting folks to ask him why. And I want to say this. That's a fine group of people. There are now over 2,000 members. And we're going to feature them on our new weekly series, Century of Lies. It's my hope that the affiliates out there will pick up on it. We'll be talking to those judges, probation officers, folks who have been in prison, folks who know that the drug war is a sham. This from Normal. A research team at New York's Buffalo Department of Family Medicine conducted a logistical retrogression analysis of approximately 900 trauma patients. They found that alcohol and cocaine use is independently associated with violence-related injuries, whereas opiate use is independently associated with nonviolent injuries and burns, and associations of positive toxicology test results for cannabis with injury type, injury mechanisms, and outcomes were not statistically significant. So in other words, John Walters is lying about that one as he tours the country. There are people coming to the hospital for marijuana are very few and very far between. I'm headed to Washington, D.C. on Monday. I'm going there to chase down some congressmen a la Michael Moore, and that should serve for an interesting cultural baggage for next week. It's my hope you'll join us at that time. Folks, it's really up to you. As Dr. Melamed was saying, if you've got your cannabinoid system up, you should have the courage to go out and do something. Take part in making the change happen. As we all know, there's nobody on the other side, no drug warrior willing to come on this show and talk about the need for change. Eternal war, eternal billions for their pockets. That's what they want, and they hide from the truth. Perhaps you've seen the ads with the print ads with a hand holding up two joints saying marijuana is twice as dangerous. Well, if the truth be told, it should be holding up half a joint. They lie in every situation that they have their hands on. Philip tells me we're running out of time. And once again, folks, for your own sake, do something. And as always, because of drug prohibition, you really don't know what's in that bag. I urge you to please be careful.
For the Drug Truth Network and our affiliates in the U.S. and Canada, this is Dean Becker for Cultural Baggage, the unvarnished truth. This show is produced at the Pacifica Studios of KPFT, Houston. Tap dancing on the edge of cannabis.